Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence and happy Friday, April 24th. This is our AI edition, packed with the latest breakthroughs, challenges, and opportunities reshaping the world around us. I'm Maya.
And I'm Alex, and it's great to be back with you. Maya, honestly, this week feels less like curating a digest and more like assembling a beautifully complex antique book. So many interconnected layers of progress, each foundational to the next, and all bound together by the potential of AI.
A little literary this week, are we? Okay, let's cut to the chase. Did you know agentic AI could automate half of all current job tasks? We're starting with the capabilities and infrastructure powering that revolution.
Two things stand out. And it's not just about replacing tasks, it's the models themselves evolving at a pace we've never seen. Are we heading towards general AI or a constellation of specialized tools?
That's what we'll unpack. Then beyond the hype, what's the real ROI of AI in the enterprise, and where are the workflow automation wins happening right now?
And finally, we're taking it to the factory floor. Industrial AI, robotics, simulation, but also the surprisingly difficult data challenges holding it back. I've found some fascinating case studies there.
Case studies you didn't tell me about. Always a surprise with you. Let's dive in. Snapchat laid off 1,000 employees after automating 65% of code generation. That's not a bug, that's the future, and it's being built on agentic AI. Let's unpack what that even means, starting with the infrastructure powering this shift.
It's a pivotal moment, shifting from viewing AI as a tool to an active participant in the software development lifecycle. The core infrastructure challenge isn't just scale, but specialization. The hyperscalers AWS, Azure, Google Cloud are generalists. We're seeing a rise of neo-cloud providers like CoreWeave, built specifically to cater to the demands of AI workloads, primarily GPU scarcity.
So CoreWeave isn't just faster Oz, it's architected differently because AI needs different things. What are those differences exactly?
Primarily stability and predictable performance. The source material points out that SWIX advises companies to avoid staking a reputation on a specific architectural thesis. This highlights that AI workloads demand consistent access to compute, not just raw speed. Traditional cloud environments optimized for variable workloads don't always deliver that. CoreWeave is focused on eliminating those bottlenecks for deep learning.
Eliminating bottlenecks sounds like marketing fluff. Is there evidence of it actually working?
The anecdotal evidence, while not rigorous, is compelling. The fact that companies are willing to build directly on these platforms, and that the 60% of Vercel's admin app traffic coming from bots demonstrates the growing dependence on agentic functionality, speaks to a tangible need. The infrastructure is adapting to accommodate this new demand.
60%? That's unsettling. It's like the machines are already running the place and we're just providing the electricity. Okay, so CoreWeave solves compute. What about the models themselves? Are we hitting a wall with scaling?
The consensus from the AIE Europe debrief is a resounding yes. Simply increasing parameter counts, even to levels like 2 trillion, 200 trillion, or even 2 quadrillion, isn't yielding proportional intelligence gains. SWIX explicitly states this, arguing that the next breakthroughs require fundamentally new model architectures and scaling laws.
So bigger isn't automatically better.
The data tells a story. The focus is shifting from brute force scaling to memory and personalization as key differentiators. This implies that the ability to retain context and adapt to individual users will be more valuable than sheer model size.
That makes sense, but how do you even build that level of memory into a model? It feels fundamentally harder than just adding more layers.
That's where concepts like synthetic rubrics and multi-turn reinforcement learning come into play. They allow for the creation of highly customized AI solutions with increased domain specificity. The key is to move beyond general-purpose models to agents capable of understanding and responding to complex, nuanced requests.
Domain-specific feels limiting, though. Does that mean we'll end up with a million specialized AI bots, each good at one thing?
Initially, yes. But the source material suggests that domain-specific models will become less decisive as memory and personalization technologies improve. The competitive advantage will lie in the underlying infrastructure that allows for rapid adaptation and personalization across diverse domains.
Okay, personalization solves the million bots problem. But what about raw capability? The examples we keep hearing about are coding agents. Why coding specifically?
Coding agents eat the world, as SWIX puts it, because the inherent property of software is that it's endlessly replicable and scalable. This allows for rapid experimentation and iteration. The AI coding market is currently in a phase of capability exploration, rewarding experimentation even if the quality is initially sloppy.
Sloppy is a generous description, I suspect. Is that why Ryan at OpenAI is reportedly spending $10,000 a day on tokens? Just throwing money at the wall and seeing what sticks.
So here's the picture. It's a high-risk, high-reward strategy. The first to discover new capabilities through sheer volume of experimentation will likely succeed, even if it means wasting resources in the process. The source material demonstrates a willingness to prioritize velocity over efficiency.
$10,000 a day. That's a lot of wasted compute, even for a company like OpenAI. But it also highlights the financial barriers to entry. If only the deep-pocketed can experiment, what about innovation outside those labs?
That's a critical point. The rise of platforms like iBox, offering access to 80-plus models for $8.99 a month, is an attempt to democratize access to AI capabilities. However, the underlying compute infrastructure remains a significant constraint.
So even with cheaper access to models, you still need the horsepower to run them effectively.
And that's where alternative chips like those from Cerebras and Thales become interesting. They aren't competing on incremental speed improvements, but on the potential for 10 times gains that unlock new application patterns. The multi-year investment cycle in custom hardware shouldn't be dismissed.
10x gains, that sounds ambitious. Are we talking about fundamentally different architectures or just clever engineering?
It's both. These chips are designed specifically for the demands of AI workloads, often prioritizing sparsity and memory bandwidth. This allows for more efficient processing of large models and complex datasets.
Okay, hardware and models are evolving. But what about the legal minefields? I've heard whispers about chat logs being discoverable.
It's a significant and often overlooked risk. The source material explicitly states that AI chat logs are generally discoverable, and using these systems with confidential information may waive attorney-client privilege.
So everything you tell an AI bot is potentially admissible in court. That's terrifying.
Essentially, yes. This creates a growing need for secure AI chat systems that offer no-record communication, similar to Signal and ProtonMail. Chris Benson speculates that this is a market opportunity ripe for disruption.
No-record chat sounds incredibly appealing and likely to be expensive. It's like a privacy tax on AI adoption.
It will likely be. The legal implications are forcing companies to prioritize security and governance, even at the expense of convenience. Anthropic's Project Glasswing, uncovering software vulnerabilities, underscores this shift.
Anthropic finding vulnerabilities, is that a genuine security measure or just clever marketing?
It's likely both. The source material suggests Anthropic is intentionally discovering and then withholding vulnerabilities to generate buzz and bolster demand for AI governance solutions. It's a calculated risk, positioning them as a responsible AI provider.
They're essentially proving how dangerous their models are to convince you they're taking safety seriously. That's a fascinatingly cynical strategy.
It's certainly a provocative approach, but it also highlights the broader concern around AI security and the need for robust auditing and certifications.
All right, so the infrastructure is shifting, the models are getting smarter, the legal risks are mounting. What's the biggest bottleneck right now beyond the actual technical capability of the AI?
Organizational capacity to absorb AI-generated output. Simply maximizing tokens doesn't guarantee value if the rest of the business can't effectively manage the resulting work. Chris Benson explicitly points out this hidden constraint.
It's like building a faster engine for a car that doesn't have enough tires. A brilliant technical solution that stalls out because of a logistical problem. What about the role of companies like Google? They control the silicon, the compute, and the agent layer.
They are uniquely positioned in the AI stack. Their TPUs, while independent verification is needed, are claimed to offer performance and cost advantages. Their integration of AI into Chrome's auto-browse feature demonstrates a full-stack approach, giving them an edge even if Gemini lags in raw benchmarks.
Full-stack sounds scary. It's like they're building their own AI ecosystem, potentially locking everyone else out.
It is a strategic advantage, but it also attracts regulatory scrutiny, as anticipated with Chrome integration and data usage. The potential for antitrust concerns is real.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground. If I had to watch one thing in the next week to gauge how this agentic AI revolution is unfolding, what would it be?
Monitor the adoption rate of OpenAI's Chronicle memory feature. The source material calls it surprisingly magical, but also notes it's token intensive. If adoption stalls due to cost, it would signal that the industry hasn't fully solved the problem of efficient memory management, and that's a crucial indicator of whether we're genuinely moving towards more intelligent, personalized agents.
Chronicle's adoption rate. Got it. Because the underlying challenge, if we circle back to everything we've just discussed, isn't just building bigger models, but building models that remember what they've learned. That's where we'll see the real breakthroughs. Let's dive into the evolving model landscape in our next section. App launches are up 104% in April alone. That's not a correction, that's a surge. Let's talk about the evolving AI model landscape because that's what's fueling it.
It's a clear indicator that the initial fears of AI rendering app development obsolete were drastically overstated. Instead, we're seeing a democratization of the process, driven by tools that lower the barrier to entry, replit cloud code, and a core enabling technology, increasingly capable foundation models.
So it's not Skynet replacing coders, it's more people building slightly worse apps faster. A beautiful chaos.
That's a deliberately reductive but not entirely inaccurate framing. What's more significant is the shift in competitive dynamics. Google, OpenAI, and Anthropic aren't just racing to build the biggest model. They're vying for control of the entire AI stack, and we're seeing a very deliberate strategy unfold.
Lip-Bu Tang's breakdown of Google's three-layer approach is key here, right? Silicon, compute hosting, and an agent layer. They're positioning themselves to win regardless of who has the best model, focusing on infrastructure.
Stepping back, that's smart, given Gemini currently trails GPT-5.4 and Claude Opus 4.7 in benchmark testing. Google is doubling down on economic advantage, specifically inference costs, TPUs optimized for scaling to a million chips, which addresses the biggest bottleneck in AI production.
Which is fascinating. We've been so focused on training costs, but the inference bottleneck is suddenly the new battleground. It's like obsessing over the price of flour when everyone's realizing the oven costs more to run.
A perfectly apt analogy. And that's where Anthropic is showing remarkable efficiency. They're achieving similar results with roughly 4 times less training compute than OpenAI, and they've secured 3.5 gigawatts of compute capacity from Google starting in 2027.
Which gets us to the revenue numbers. Anthropic passing OpenAI, $30 billion annualized revenue versus $25 billion, that's a shock. Especially considering OpenAI's early lead.
It's a significant reversal, and it's largely driven by their focus on enterprise adoption. Over 80% of Anthropic's revenue comes from business customers, with over 1,000 spending more than $1 million annually on Claude. OpenAI is trying to catch up, but integration challenges have stalled enterprise adoption, creating a crucial opening for companies like Infosys to act as a channel.
So OpenAI built the cool toy, Anthropic built the thing companies will actually pay for, and Infosys is the middleman selling it to the CFOs.
Essentially. And that mirrors Microsoft's bundling of Azure OpenAI with Copilot, but Infosys has distribution channels OpenAI struggles to reach, serving Fortune-tier accounts directly. The real win isn't just the model, but the ecosystem around it.
And that ecosystem is shifting towards agents. Sid Perskai highlighted the emphasis on inference compute and agent orchestration, prioritizing complex reasoning over simple code generation. Blitzy is a perfect example, focusing on enterprise-scale code bases and 5x engineering velocity.
The pattern is clear. This is supported by the surge in AI agent success rates, rising from 12% to 66% in just 1 year. That increase demonstrates that the value proposition is maturing. These aren't just chatbots anymore, they're automating meaningful tasks.
The Sora shutdown feels particularly telling in that context, right? $1 to $15 million daily cost was unsustainable, and the timing coincides with Anthropic's revenue growth.
We can trace that further. It signals a strategic pivot away from compute-intensive multimodal models. OpenAI is recognizing the unit economics don't scale. The departure of three key executives further supports that assessment. They're recalibrating, likely towards coding and enterprise solutions.
And the Cerebras IPO complicates things. $23 billion valuation competing directly with NVIDIA, stealing inference business, it cracks the monopoly.
It does. And it's not just about hardware, though that's critical. The gap between US and Chinese AI models is shrinking, down to 2.7% according to Stanford's AI Index, which adds another layer of pressure. It's a reminder that performance isn't the only metric. Accessibility and cost are equally important.
We've got Google building the infrastructure, Anthropic owning the enterprise workflow, OpenAI recalibrating, and a hardware upstart challenging NVIDIA. What does that mean for the next year?
I predict we'll see more category-specific players like Factory, valued at $1.5 billion despite competition from the giants, emerging to address niche enterprise needs, specifically around compliance and security. VCs recognize the value of specialization within a crowded space.
It's like the Wild West of AI coding tools right now. Everyone's claiming they can solve a piece of the puzzle, but the real winner will be the one who can integrate seamlessly into existing workflows.
Something to flag here, here's where I genuinely hesitate. We're seeing so much investment, so much disruption, so much focus on solving problems, that I'm not sure we fully understand the second-order consequences of all these incredibly powerful, rapidly evolving models. The performance is increasing exponentially, but our ability to manage the risks, that's a different story.
That's a good point. If we're focused on merging and shipping code, and everyone's pushing for automation, are we adequately addressing the security implications of these agents accessing sensitive data and automating critical tasks? That's the question that hasn't been answered, and maybe it's the most important one. Which brings us to ROI, because understanding the financial impact of these workflows is the only way we'll be able to measure this impact. So apparently replicating a simple app with an LLM costs 10 times more than just using a platform. That's not a cost-benefit analysis, that's a hostage situation. We're talking about ROI in the enterprise today, a topic that seems to be actively resisting common sense.
It's a critical point, isn't it? Bill McDermott framed it beautifully. It's not about whether LLMs can do something, but whether they should, given the total cost of ownership. The entire SaaSpocalypse narrative hinges on this miscalculation, assuming that raw AI power trumps the economies of scale and historical context baked into established systems. That's a false equivalence.
False and spectacularly expensive. Debda Sen, talking about TCG Digital, emphasizes a hybrid approach. It's not all AI or all first principles, it's both. Which feels remarkably like acknowledging that AI isn't magic.
It's a telling detail. He illustrates that with M3, which runs agents within the enterprise boundary to validate decisions against internal information. This is essential. You're building a trust layer, mitigating language model hallucinations. It's a data flywheel approach, not a wholesale replacement. Think of AI adoption as typesetting a complex document. You wouldn't just swap out every font for a shiny new one. You'd carefully select and combine them for clarity, legibility, and impact.
Typesetting. Okay. And TCG's MQ platform gets a 10 times return for clients through this agentic approach, while focusing on core functions, not replacement. That sounds responsible, which is a lower bar in AI than it should be.
Responsible is precisely the right word. The focus on continuous optimization is key. Sen also highlights the curated knowledge graph in specific domains, chemistry, biology, built from PhD expertise. That's the differentiator, deep domain knowledge rather than horizontal AI. Horizontal AI provides the broad strokes, that's why integration is so crucial.
So it's not enough to just have AI, you need to have AI that understands like oil refining. And it's a surprisingly high bar given how much of the internal knowledge is unwritten.
That's where agent mining comes in, as SAP's Philip Herzig discussed, building a data flywheel of verified decision traces. Capturing that tribal knowledge is the hardest part. It's also why internal AI infrastructure like RAMP's Glass system is emerging as a moat. They aren't just building tools, they're building a system that learns and improves with every use.
RAMP's system deliberately doesn't limit user capability, assuming the AI can act as a tutor and coach. Which feels like a bold bet. Most companies are terrified of letting people near complex tools.
It's a bet on democratizing AI proficiency. And it's aligned with Shopify's experience. Mikkel Perakin saw users who immediately installed a skill and achieved a result learned faster than those relying on training. A functional tool is the education. The entire focus shifts to learning by doing and reducing friction, not gatekeeping.
Okay, so speed of integration and ease of use. But what about the people? Bill McDermott mentioned predicting a shift where AI agents will reduce the need for net new headcount. That's a euphemism for job replacement, right?
It's more nuanced. He anticipates replacing roles hired during the pandemic boom without rigorous vetting. The new headcount will be tied to digital transformation, agent implementation, and high-value roles like engineering. The value proposition isn't just automating mundane tasks, it's upleveling employee roles, like finance staff becoming junior developers overseeing agent-driven code.
2% in refinery output offering a novel framing of AI's strategic importance in resource security, that's an absurdly small number for an existential threat.
It's deceptively powerful. Sen points out that even small percentage improvements in industrial yield have a tangible economic impact, especially in politically sensitive areas. That's framing AI not as a general efficiency boost, but as a critical infrastructure reliability component, preventing weeks of lost production. It's a shift in priorities driven by geopolitical instability.
Preventing downtime. Okay, so survival as a business case. That changes everything. But it feels still really far from the agentic business we're promised.
That tension is absolutely real. The gap between AI leaders and laggards isn't just tool adoption, it's building institutional AI, comprehensive organizational systems. And right now, most companies are stuck in experimentation. The biggest question, and what keeps me up at night, is whether we can build that coordination layer to manage the chaos of diverse AI usage and align outputs toward shared goals before the verbosity of AI-generated code overwhelms our capacity to test and deploy reliably.
Industrial AI isn't that just regular AI, but slower and with more liability paperwork.
That's a deliberately provocative framing, but it highlights a crucial difference. While the underlying algorithms might share similarities with consumer AI, the constraints are fundamentally different. We're moving beyond simply building AI models to engineering where the data will come from, as skilled AI points out, and that's exponentially harder in a physical environment.
8 months to 8 minutes for simulations, according to Siemens, impressive, but what's the actual problem they're solving? Are we talking about shaving time off design iterations or preventing robots from spontaneously combusting?
It's both, actually, and it points to the core challenge. The speed-up isn't the primary value, it's the disruption of established workflows. Siemens' Peter Kort argues AI implementation is 80% transformation and 20% technology. Faster simulations allow for more iterations, more testing for corner cases, and crucially, a reshaping of how roles and data verification work in manufacturing.
So more meetings, but faster?
Not necessarily more meetings, but different ones. The paradigm shift is towards a generalist approach, like skilled brain, continuously learning from every deployment to create a self-sustaining data flywheel. This addresses data scarcity, a bottleneck in robotics, because, unlike language AI with its internet of data, physical systems don't generate infinite training examples.
Which means if a robot encounters an unexpected shade of blue, the whole factory shuts down, right? Or a slightly different box label. Or worst case, it begins offering existential commentary on the futility of automated labor.
The corner case issue is precisely why horizontal omnibodied intelligence is so attractive. Data from one vertical say a factory can inform performance in another, a hospital creating greater robustness. It's a data network effect. Individual operators have insufficient data, but pooling it unlocks substantial benefits, as Siemens emphasizes.
A data commune for robots, who knew?
It's more strategic than that. Orchestration is becoming the key differentiator, not the models themselves. Claude Code succeeded not because of a radically new model, but improved packaging and workflow, echoing the current innovation wave around agent management. Skilled is prioritizing rapid system specialization and fine-tuning to initiate that general data flywheel.
Let's be real, orchestrating robots at scale hasn't been done before.
Worth noting, deployment in robotics demands rigorous testing beyond task completion. Skilled uses metrics focusing on generalization and safety, acknowledging the high stakes of real-world operation. It's fundamentally different from software deployment, where user adoption drives implementation.
Okay, so what should we be watching? If all this plays out, what's the one thing that signals whether industrial AI is truly taking off?
Look for the emergence of standardized interfaces for agent communication. If we see a true interoperability layer, allowing AI agents from different providers to seamlessly coordinate across diverse industrial systems, that would signal a fundamental shift. By early 2025, a robust agent marketplace could be the clearest indicator of progress, allowing for the rapid deployment of specialized solutions based on combined pooled data.
So looking back over the last hour, it feels like we've been charting the birth of a new kind of industrial revolution. We started with the plumbing, the massive compute demands forcing a shift away from generalized cloud providers, and ended up discussing the very shape of the businesses that will use this power. It's not just about faster chips, is it? It's about entirely new categories of infrastructure and a really pragmatic approach to ROI.
Consider this, that pragmatism is key. We saw that with the Siemens example, Peter Kort's 80-20 split, emphasizing transformation over technology. It's a fascinating corrective to the hype cycle. All this talk of trillion-parameter models feels increasingly tangential when you consider the real constraint is organizational capacity, the ability to manage, verify, and actually use the output. The sheer verbosity of these systems, as we discussed, is a bottleneck in itself.
Snapchat automating code generation is a chillingly efficient example of that potential, but the 1,000 layoffs also point to a very real cost. And that raises a huge question. Is this eliminating bottlenecks or simply shifting them? The 60% of Versal's admin traffic from bots suggests AI is taking on more, but it also highlights the need for a new kind of maintenance and oversight.
It's a strange feedback loop, isn't it? We're building these incredibly powerful tools, but the cost of operating them, Ryan at OpenAI spending $10,000 a day on tokens, mean access is concentrated. And the legal risks, the data privacy concerns, that's a genuine tax on adoption. If Chronicle adoption doesn't take off, it's not necessarily a technical failure, it's a failure of trust and security. It's like wine tasting, all the finest grapes in the world don't matter if the cellar is contaminated.
And that need for trust is driving the category-specific AI players, the compliance companies, the security specialists. We talked about the gap between US and Chinese models shrinking, but maybe that's the wrong metric. The real race isn't about raw intelligence, it's about building the guardrails.
There's a signal here, it's about the institutional AI layer. The systems for managing complex workflows, robust auditing, and fundamentally, understanding what these models are actually doing. Anthropic's success, 80% business revenue, 1,000 plus $1 million clients, is a testament to that. They're not just selling models, they're selling predictability and control.
What about the specialization versus general intelligence debate? It feels like we keep circling back to that.
It's a false dichotomy, I think. We'll see both. The initial wave will undoubtedly be specialized agents, but the long-term goal, and it is still a goal, is more general adaptability. The M3 return for TCG Digital suggests the value is in transforming existing workflows through these targeted applications, laying the groundwork for a future that might integrate even broader capabilities. The biggest tension, though, remains the security risk trade-off. We're moving so fast, we barely have time to assess the consequences.
A calculated risk indeed. And a very exciting one. We'll be watching Chronicle's adoption rate closely and the emergence of these standardized agent interfaces. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you next Friday.